You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Antler Up podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear, and we got a great show for you all today. You're listening to the Antler Up podcast, where we dive into archery, hunting, and the mindset needed to elevate your game. Join us as we explore the latest strategies and gear to help you become the best hunter you can be, both in and out of the woods. Tethered is a team of saddle hunting fanatics with a passionate addiction to whitetail hunting. Designing and engineering products to be a more efficient and confident hunter, Tethered produces the most mobile, stealthy, and safest elevated hunting gear on the planet. Built by saddle hunters for the saddle hunter. Head over to tetherednation.com to see for yourself what exactly I'm talking about. When you hit the woods, there's no room for second-rate gear. That's why I trust Huntworth. They build high-performance hunting gear that keeps you concealed, comfortable, and locked in without the ridiculous price tag. Whether it's lightweight gear for those sweaty September sits, rock-solid mid-season layers, or insulated late-season killers, Huntworth has the lineup to keep you grinding all year long. And every season, they're dropping new gear that's built for serious hunters who demand more out of what they wear. So if you're tired of paying for a logo instead of performance, it's time to upgrade. Head over to huntworthgear.com, check out the full lineup, and hunt prepared, hunt hard, hunt with Huntworth. You're about to be in the thick of things. You're going to have a lot of stuff on your plate here in the next couple weeks, months to come. You're going to be busy. The holiday season's coming right behind us, closing that door, man. So I have a really, really fun guest today. And I got Daniel Parker on, and there's a difference between using gear and understanding it. Most hunters, archers know what they shoot. Very few people know why it was maybe built that way. So today's conversation is about craftsmanship, responsibility. It's also about the small details that really matter when the moment of truth arrives, whether you are on the Lancaster archery, shoot line, whether you are on an ASA shoot national event, ready to win a lot of money if you're a pro, or if you're a regular hunter like myself, you're up in the woods, in a saddle, in a tree stand, from a blind, whatever have it, the moment of truth, those small details will matter in those moments of truth. And my guest today lives in that intersection between archers, hunters, and the brand that some people will trust. A lot of people trust, and put it more matter of fact. And this isn't a product episode, and I want to make that clear. This episode is about craftsmanship behind what you shoot or what an individual shoots. It's about people behind the brand as well. So today, Daniel Parker from Matthews, welcome to the Antler Up podcast, man.
I appreciate you having me on, buddy. I'm pumped for this. And yeah, I know this will be a new topic, I guess, for me, kind of. I feel like I'm familiar with it enough, and I appreciate you having the confidence in me to be able to display it properly.
Heck yeah, man. Daniel, so before, instead of starting with the whole job titles, job descriptions, and I want you to start here. When you walk into Matthews every day, what do you personally feel responsible for getting right?
Customer service. I know this maybe sounds a little cliche, but it's like one thing that we truly pride ourselves on. You know, always just do the best we can to make sure the customer is happy, and everything that goes out this door is 100% finished and to the best possible, you know, be the best possible product that it could be. No blemishes, you know, and so on. So we just want to, you know, give that customer the best experience possible. That's what it all comes down to. I mean, obviously I deal direct with consumers too, but like other brands, I mean, there's a lot of other brands that reach out to us. So I'm dealing with them, not necessarily on a daily basis, but you know, enough that, you know, that's a customer of ours. So yeah, dealers, consumers, other industry brands. So yeah, we deal with a lot of folks here, and I really enjoy it. Talking, just communicating with people in general and just maintaining relationships, building relationships. That's something that I really strive on. And I think that's, you know, that's why I love going to events as much as I do. Like, you know, dealing with those guys at TAC, at ASA, at NFAA, all those organizations, like those are people I also deal direct with too. So, yeah.
It's unbelievable how, one, you think about like in that customer care and service and relationships and the things that you're doing, it's beyond special. I don't even know like the right word in terminology to put it, because when you build the relationships, and you're dealing with probably so many different facets between dealers. I mean, who, like, besides dealers and people like that, who are some other, like, obviously not naming names, but like what type of other individuals are you helping take care of like day in and day out?
I mean, obviously I deal direct with consumers too, but like other brands, I mean, there's a lot of other brands that reach out to us. So I'm dealing with them, not necessarily on a daily basis, but you know, enough that, you know, that's a customer of ours. So yeah, dealers, consumers, other industry brands. So yeah, we deal with a lot of folks here, and it's I really enjoy it. Talking, just communicating with people in general and just maintaining relationships, building relationships. That's something that I really strive on. And I think that's, you know, that's why I love going to events as much as I do. Like, you know, dealing with those guys at TAC, at ASA, at NFAA, all those organizations, like those are people I also deal direct with too. So, yeah.
And you get a chance to see them so often, right? Like when the year goes by, you're like, man, you could sit there and say probably in the heat of the moment when things are getting going crazy. I mean, you know, the holiday season, like I said, is behind us, but next thing you know, you're going to be going to an ASA event and you're going to be like, holy cow, like that went pretty fast that year. You know what I mean? And and not to, you know, just to put it in perspective for the listeners, you know, I just said, obviously there you are, you're in the building at Matthews, but Daniel, you've been there for 7+ years. That's a long time. So the relationships and the amount of events and activities and just you name it that you've been a part of and help building. I mean, that, so just to put that in perspective, people, that's going even before, that's like the Halon. Is that the 32? That would probably be.
I think I joined Triax. Triax was the current boat. So I started in September and the Triax was the current model. And then that November we launched the Verdix is what it was. So that'd been like 2018, fall of 2018, I think it is. Yeah. That math adds up.
Yep. Yeah, that's, I always joke. That's why I'm a health and phys ed teacher, man. You know, can't get me on that. But no, man, so you're in a unique position, Daniel. And, you know, you're not just inside Matthews. You're talking to dealers, archers, hunters every single day in some form or capacity. And you see patterns most people never get really a chance to see. So from where you sit, what values do you see Matthews protecting consistently?
Oh, gosh. We have, you know, test me a little bit. We have... you know, three core values. One of them is that sticks out to me the most is integrity. You know, like we are behind our products 100%. So, and this is a family owned business. You know, this isn't a company that's ever been sold. It's always been Matt McPherson and his wife and his brother, who actually just retired, September, I think it was. But it's like, the number of people that work here that have been here for 10, 15, 20, even there's been some people that have been here for 30 years, and there's couples, like there's husbands and wives, and then their kids have been here. Like our VP of sales and marketing, he's been here for 25 years. We have a husband and wife that have, and his wife works here too. And we have another husband and wife who works in purchasing and, the technical department. They've been here since before they moved to Sparta, because this Matthew started in Minnesota. And there's, I can for sure count three people that came from Minnesota. So that would have been, I mean, this company started in 1992 and it's 2020, almost 2026. And they've been here since 92. So it's crazy to think that, you know, you don't hear that very often, that people stay around, a company that long. You know, I feel like in today's day and age, people work at a company 5 to 10 years, bounce around to another company and so on and so forth. But like, there's a lot of people that have been here for a long time, and there's a reason for it. Matt takes care of all of his employees. So yeah.
That's really neat. I mean, that was the one aspect this past fall. I really enjoy talking with the individuals from the NDA, the National Deer Association, and listening to how long they've been working for, either the, like back when it was the QDMA or some part of within deer research. And amongst the five individuals that I recorded with, there was over 100 years. And I mean, like, okay, when you think of the math, like, okay, yeah, like, you know, but like, you're talking people that have been doing it for 20 plus years. Like, that, it's just a really neat, you know, thing. And when you look at what you're just saying, there's people working there since the beginning. I mean, when you look at, probably, I would love to hear like some of their early, like those individuals' early conversations that they would have, like, oh man, are we going to make it? And, you know, here we are, like you said, and, you know, 30 plus years, here we are. And it's, you know, one of the biggest, archery companies in the world. And it's just, look where you're at. There you are in just, you know, Wisconsin. And it's just, I don't know, it's really cool. And there must be, and that's the point. And that's the, there must be something, right? And it's not just, wow, here we go. It's just an open door of new people hiring. To me, that means there's a recipe within that is going extremely well, that obviously you don't want secrets going out there all the time of what's going really well, but man, there's just got to be something where the employees are taken care of, leadership's in a really good spot, and it just starts from the top, you know. And I find that so fascinating, and I have a lot of respect for any company like that. In general, just because it's hard to come by. And you know, when you talk about integrity, that's just something that not only with the company you work for at Matthews, but just in general, I think a lot of people, especially in this day and age, we need more of.
Right. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, during busy season, we have over 400 employees that are working here. So which busy season for us, I mean, honestly, is like 90% of the year, which is crazy to think. Like archery, typically you think of fall only. Well, then you got target archery, but then you also have tack shoots, you know, that's getting hunters from, I think April is the first shoot all the way till August. So like there's people shooting their bow year round. So like we don't have much of a slow season like we used to in the past. And it wasn't ever like slow to begin with, but now it's like, we're gunning hard, like 90-95% of the year, you know, production's going 24/6. We don't work on Sundays. So 24 hours a day, there's three shifts in the machine shop, 6 days a week. Our string department has two shifts, you know, and we're in here Monday through Friday, just grinding away. So.
Well, you brought up a good point there, and you said about like how there's more, you know, there's no down, there's no lull period 90% of the time. Man, have you noticed like a boom in archery within like your 7 years there, where it doesn't necessarily need to be individuals that they're hunters, right? Like they're, you know, you probably have seen it. You probably hear it. Oh, our hunting numbers are going down. But man, when you look at certain numbers, it's a head scratcher, because you might think like, really, because of how well things are going.
Right.
But you know, you have these events like Total Archery Challenge that, man, what did I send you that text message a couple weeks ago? Pennsylvania is now going to have, what did I say, 9 courses?
Yeah.
Something along those lines. Like, that was always one of their biggest events, and it just got bigger. So you have events like that, and people that just are local, you know, part of maybe their archery club. And there's a bunch of ones here in Pennsylvania that through social media that I follow and just get a chance to see how many youth archers are competing and being part of these archery clubs. I think it's great to see. The NAS program stuff is going really good.
That's growing.
That's growing. So I just think it's those things. So have you noticed within your 7 years? I mean, obviously, I'm sure there were up and downs, but like more so recently, is there a trend where you're just like, man, a lot of people are picking up a bow?
I mean, honestly, like 2020 COVID year, we're getting back a little bit, but like the industry in general, like big boom, obviously that was an economical turn for a lot of companies, sometimes some for the worse, unfortunately. But for us, like recreational sports went through the roof. So honestly, like the year prior to that, because I think the V3 came out for us in 2020, the VXR was the year prior, and the VXR was the first year that we offered two axle to axle options for the flagship bow. We had the VXR 28 and the VXR 31.5, and that was kind of like, I don't want to say a test here, because we knew it would do good, but it did exceptionally well. And then COVID hit and we had the V327, the V331. And again, we've continued from there with two different axle to axle options. And it's just grown exponentially. Like offering those two different axle to axle options has helped this company in general. But then like the sport in and of itself, the year of the lift, so it would be 2 years ago as well, 2024. Fall of 2024, when the lift came out, like that was a booming year. You know, one thing that we take into consideration too, and I would imagine other companies do this as well, like we don't just throw a random bow together each year and say, okay, this is the best we got, let's run it. You know, there's technology, and like you have to be strategic with the products that you launch and when you launch it. Like if you know it's going to be a down year economically, like you, it might be wise for you to not launch the baddest, coolest thing. Cause it's not going to sell, not because it's a bad product, but because the economy just isn't allowing it. So, you know, that's just a business strategy in general. And, you know, we're wise to that as well. And, but the year of the lift, we knew it was just going to be a great year, and we gave it our all, and it went off like crazy. So, and then this year too, with the arc, like, to be honest, my personal opinion on that, like, I wasn't sure, like, yeah, this is going to be a sweet year. You know, I don't think it's going to be like an absolute booming year, but I think it's going to be a really good year. Like every year we've grown, like there's no doubt about that. But I didn't think this year would be like this. I thought it'd be like a that, you know, growth. Yeah. But boy, was I wrong. like the Ark like had some crazy good reviews out of the gate. And it's just been nonstop, go, go, go. We just got at least 4 new CNC machines to try and keep up with production. So it's just been, wow. It's just been crazy. So, yeah.
So, you're hearing from a bunch of different people, like I mentioned, and, you know, talk to more hunters and archers, professional archers, in a month, probably, than most people do in a year. You know, what patterns show up again and again, maybe in these conversations, with these people, like maybe with what they're looking for or anything, maybe not even necessarily geared towards what you're doing in that building, but even in just maybe in other general, you know, wisdom.
Sure. I mean, like product wise, the one thing that I heard the most was actually grips. Like, as silly as it sounds, like people previously didn't like our grip. So this past year came out with the Bond grip system. So like, we do listen to the customers. It might take us a couple of years because we're not just going to put together some random grips and say, here you go. You know, it took us over a year to, you know, study ergonomics and materials and just to get it dialed in exactly how we want it. So, yeah, we listen to the consumers, but it just, perfection takes time, as yep. You know, everybody's heard that saying before. Other like trends in general, is that kind of what you were asking? It's just trends.
Yep.
Kind
yep.
of. Let's see. I mean, there's the debate with heavy arrow versus light arrow, mechanicals versus fixed heads, and the whole Ashby thing, obviously, with the heavy arrow versus light arrow type thing. That trend, probably was around 2020 when the heavy arrow thing became a little more popular. And then Joel Maxfield, the first employee for Matthews, started doing some actual like testing. Like, the Ashby stuff is based off scientific, you know, numbers and some data, but a lot of it's based off of old bows, like really old bows that were not efficient. So like new technology, new bows, like that, it's going to be significantly different. So like, he would do actual testing and show people video proof, you know, a lot of analysis. And for me, I'm a fan of like a light to mid-weight arrow, skinny diameter, and I shoot a mechanical broadhead as well. So I think that trend of heavy arrow is starting to taper off, especially with like TAC has been a big advocate for that. Not on purpose, I don't think, but like, they have long shots. So it's harder for some of those heavy arrow guys to shoot those longer targets. I mean, there's some courses that your average shot is 60, 70 yards. So right. I'm not saying that a heavy arrow is wrong. I just think that your trade-off to me isn't, what you gain with the heavy arrow doesn't beat what you would gain with a little bit lighter arrow. So,
right.
Yeah.
That's a really fun conversation. And I know I find it fun just because there's so many different ways you could look at it, because, you know, I have a T-Rex, you know, syndrome. I'm only shooting 27 and a half, maybe 28 if I'm lucky on certain bows,
yep.
Inch draw length. And I'm with you. I like to still be in that medium range when it becomes setting up my hunting arrow. And that's, I like to be around 450 is right where yeah. I like to be around. And, yep. But what's funny is you get someone like my best friend, Jim, he's about a 28 and a half inch draw. And he built one arrow that does it all. He takes this arrow to tack. He's been hunting with it now for 2 years, and it's right around like a four. Oh man, I hope I don't misquote him, but I know it's light. It's like a 420, 415, 420-ish arrow, maybe 25 if he's throwing on like a lighted nock or something along those lines.
Sure.
However, he's been getting pass-throughs. He's killed, two bucks on the ground the past 2 years, one broadside. Obviously, he got a full pass through, but then he got one in 2024 season up in New York. It was a close shot. He had a frontal shot and he blasted through that deer. And he's like, I'm a believer now. He's like, how great is that? I make one arrow and it does it all.
Yep.
And you know, and he like, and he, same thing, shooting mechanical. There's no fixed blade on that one. And yep. I mean, that's the beauty of guys like, you know, that if you are out there shooting every single day, or you really hone in on your craft, or you take pride in it, that's that way you could test and do a bunch of different things like that. Now, obviously what you're doing in your backyard on a foam target is going to be completely different on a live animal, but you know, if you know you're getting a really good penetration on a foam target, you know, you're going to get something really good on a live animal. So, but yeah, I'm with you on that. That's a good conversation. You know, what about like, let me ask you this. Cause again, I love when Matthews puts out, like right before hunting, well, I guess Western hunting's already going on, but before the whitetail stuff comes out, you know, I've seen in the past, you guys will host, you know, some of the pro guys or the main guys that are out there, that Matthews sponsors, you guys do a day together, man. When you have, like, those guys in-house, Levi, Crispy, and others, what about like up here mentally? What are you grasping, or is there any golden nuggets that you've pulled from those guys just hearing them talk or from other people around?
Sure. I mean, some of that stuff I've got from Levi. Like I'm around him like a decent amount at the ASA shoots, and then him being around here, like I've heard him talk enough about arrows. Like him and Joel are on the same page when it comes to, you know, a good weight arrow, mechanical broadhead. Like I listen to them a lot when it comes to that. Cause like my arrow is what I depend on, like almost as much as your bow itself, because that's the part that needs to, you know, that's what you're shooting at the animal. So how much experience those two guys have with hunting is like unfathomable. Like they've been in probably every possible experience that you can imagine in every single hunting situation, period. It's like they just have the experience. And it's like, if they're telling me this about an arrow, about a broadhead, about a setup, you're darn right, I'm going to listen to it. You know, I do try to do a lot of testing on my own. Like I'll test different vanes. I've shot different mechanicals over the years. I keep coming back to two specific ones, but, and arrows, I've tried a few different arrows over the past couple of years. I've always stuck with the 4mm arrow. Just cause that I don't think you could ever disprove that a skinnier arrow doesn't penetrate better. I think that's pretty, pretty obvious. So I'll stick with the 4mm arrow or a 166 in some brands terms. But just being around those two guys, and like Chris, Levi too, they both have target archery backgrounds. So like, it's not just their setup, but it's their shot process too that I'm listening to. And now Chris is becoming more established in the whitetail world. Like he's killed some big deer, but having him, having Levi, having the Drurys here, like you listen to how they set up their properties, you know, how they access, why, you know, when, and like all that stuff. Yeah. I've soaked up little bits and pieces, you know, over the years. And it's like, it's definitely proven to work for me. The past few years I've shot good bucks the past 3-4 years in a row now. And it's like all these little tidbits here and there, they definitely added up.
Yeah. So I like that. We'll talk about some of your hunting stuff here in a little bit, for no doubt about it. And it's fascinating to see what Levi's done with his Pennsylvania property. I mean, he puts out a great amount of content out there from where he travels all over. But obviously with me being the homer of PA, I love to see what he's done, because every time that he's killed on there, he's in a timber aspect. It's not just like sitting out on a field edge or something like that. It's really cool. Yeah. Cool to see that. Cause I know he has that aspect too of his property. Now, Daniel, let me ask you this. Where do you see the biggest gap between what any archer expects from like their gear, like the biggest gap between, you know, what actually matters once they're either in the woods or on that stake at an ASA event, you know, what do you see as the biggest gap?
I'm going to say something that nobody is really going to like, and it's going to be honestly practice. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many people that like instantly look at their gear and say, oh my gosh, this failed. Or like, my pin was not there when I shot. Guaranteed it was not. There's something wrong with my bow. And it's like, dude, like, you need to just practice. Like, everything is about consistency. You and I talked about this. I think we texted about this not long ago. Like, I don't like paper punching indoor. Like, I don't truly like it when it comes to Vegas faces or five spot faces, but I think it is the best practice that you can possibly have when it comes to other target archery or hunting, because what that does is it increases endurance, mental game, consistency. It's like, those are three key recipes, like the only things that you really need to be an archer. Because like Levi posted a video, I think it was this past spring, summer, like your bow can be out of tune. And like I've heard Dan McCarthy talk about this, you know, one of the top 3D archers in the world. Like, if that bow is out of tune, like your bow, you have to think of as a mechanical device. It is repeatable. It will do the same thing every single time if you put it in a machine. But it's not a machine. You have to think of yourself. You are the archer. The bow is going to do the same thing every time. So if you do something different, you as the archer, your bow will do something different. So practice is what it comes down to every single time. Yes, you can check your equipment to make sure, like, you know, target archers will measure their axle to axle and their peep sight height, you know, at every tournament to make sure that it's okay. When I was practicing, this is what it was. Okay, I got to my tournament. It's in the exact same spot, so I know my bow is good. Same thing for arrows. You know, people will spin their arrows, which that can go down a rabbit hole too, because sometimes, like, honestly, an arrow that has a little bit of wobble, 99% of archers are not going to know a difference, and it's still going to hit the same spot at 60 mm-hmm. yards. But you know, that comes into the mental game. Like, if you think that this arrow hits different, then make a little mark on your vein and just keep it as a practice arrow. But like 99% of the time, it's the Indian, not the bow.
Yeah.
So
that's so good.
Yeah.
But it is, but it's so true, because I've been guilty of that. And I've been mentioning that on the podcast that I needed to take my own advice a lot more this past year. And in when it comes to not necessarily archery related, but just, heck, even just certain parts of saddle hunting, you know, I've been doing it now for sure. So long that I'm like, yeah, I got it. I don't need the practice. But man, there are certain spots where I maybe was just a little bit rusty this past year where I'm like, yeah, that cost me a little bit. You know what I mean? I just, you know, certain movements. And you know, I got picked off one time. I was just being lazy. I saw one doe and I was trying to fill the freezer, and I should have looked around a little bit, because lo and behold, there was a little one right behind it that I just missed. And, that one, you know, started freaking out a little bit. And, you know, and again, obviously that's not shooting, but it's just the practice, like just certain things. When you're rusty and you're not doing it consistently, you are going to, it's going to come up in some way or another. And that definitely happened to me. And man, that's the one thing I love about, I call it the 3-4 yard groups. You know, some of my biggest strides in mental game when it comes to shooting and archery is getting just those little repetitions. And, you know, like we were saying, and, you know, text messaging back and forth about doing indoor finally, you know, Nate finally, busting my chops long, you know, enough that I'm finally going to go out there.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo, shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Do it. And, you know, we were just saying, man, how great is it that come outdoor season, I'm going to have a legit 600 arrow practice. And that's just counting the actual me shooting paper. Like, there's going to be more because I'm practicing. That's just awesome. And when you look at it in that terms, man, if you're just looking to maybe fix things and try to break through that barrier, coming from the Kinesis background, you know, I always go back to teaching kids about, you know, where's that improvement, you know, come in the physical side of things. I always say, okay, let's look at it as a balloon, right? Like, you're stuck in that balloon. You haven't bursted it yet, man. You just need to keep going just that little bit more. And boom, once that pops, you go right into a new balloon. And there you go. Now you're in a higher level. And that's the same thing when it comes to archery and mental. Like, you break that barrier down, now you're unlocking another aspect of your potential of what you could, you know, possibly do as a hunter, as a...
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy...
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/auto discounts. Restrictions apply.
3D archer, man, and that's the fun side of things. But yeah, practice is key. Practice is huge. Don't pick your bow up in August or in September for the October openers. Just shoot it all, you know, maybe not all year round if that's not your jam, but those that are of you listening, I'm pretty sure that is kind of your jam. Keep at it, hammer home, you know, whatever fence you're on, the always be tinkering or not always be tinkering fence, whatever it be, have at it and enjoy it. That's the key for that.
For sure. You know, like, there's enough like local 3D shoots like in my area. And I'm sure like every state has local 3D shoots. And it's like, they come up with their schedule typically, I don't know,
now
February, March. And they say, hey, yeah, we're going to have shoots this day, this day, this day. Like, I strongly advise people, hey, right now, when you know you don't have anything scheduled during those weekends, pick at least two throughout this whole summer. Okay. That's 2 days in this whole summer that you're going to go and shoot the, you know, the local 3D fun course type of thing. But not only does it make people shoot that course, but typically those people will grab a bow, their bow, like the day before or something like that, just to make sure that it's on at least, you know. It's like every arrow matters. Every day that you're practicing counts. So whatever it takes just to get a few more arrows down range, yeah, I'm a big advocate for.
I like that, Daniel. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to shift just slightly, because this connects directly to everything we've been covering so far. You know, you experienced this not just through calls, conversations, but through your own hunts, like everything that you've been doing. You know, can you walk us through like a moment in the field where, man, like what you are holding in your hand, your bow or any piece of gear, decision stopped being like theoretical, right? Like where something you experience as a hunter or on the 3D course or somewhere stayed with you afterwards.
Oh man. I this might sound weird, but I like talk to myself a little bit, you know, like not just a little pep talk, but like hunting in particular. Like I have a 3-pin horizontal sight, and it's like I mentally tell myself, you know, aim at the lower 12. Okay, this is bottom pin. Mm-hmm. And I would have already like ranged the animal type of thing, you know, 37 yards, bottom pin, aim at the lower 12. Like that's every time that I'm shooting at an animal, like I'm basically repeating that. So it's just, it's creating that consistency in like my whole shot process, yep, type of thing. So I do similar when it comes to target archery stuff, you know, like I'll mentally break down the target on if I'm going to aim at the upper or lower. This is for 3D stuff, obviously. Yep. Am I going to aim at the upper or the lower? Which one can I see better? Well, this one's stuffed with arrows. I better aim at the lower, but like, let's pick a spot. I feel like I'm relatively good at referencing arrows, or spots on the target type of thing. So like sometimes I aim too hard when I see like a close 3D target and I can see the ring and it's like, oh, I can aim at that. That's super easy. But like people get bug eyed and I'm known for that. So it's like, I don't shoot with a lens in my target setup because again, I just get bug eyed sometimes. So I am picking a shadow, picking a crease, picking a dot and be like, okay, it's like about this far to the right, this far above that shadow. And like, I'm pretty good at referencing, but I'm still saying, you know, why am I picking this spot? Okay, this is the distance. Hold steady, trust the pin float, and go from there.
Yeah.
Like, that's definitely one other thing, too, is, like, I've learned to accept the pin float, whether it's hunting or target archery.
Yeah.
You know, like, nobody can ever make a pin sit perfectly still. So you have to be okay with that little bit of pin float.
Let me ask you this. So with the confidence, you know, when does a setup, a bow setup for you, like when, like, and you're just gelling with it, like,
mm-hmm.
I don't even know what's the right way to even ask this type of question, but like with your, like we were just saying, I was messaging earlier with my setup, man, I've been getting the 4 yard groups and I got the peep tied in. So now I got to get my 20, like the confidence that I have already in this set, specific setup that I have with the 34 for competitions and indoor and just the getting out there and sending 3D stuff. It's like a different, like a different sense of feeling like at aim.
For sure.
Like up here.
Yep.
Like I'm not thinking of anything else of like, oh man, that feels a little off. I am just so laser sharp, mentally fixated right now. I don't know, when you have that feeling with your setup,
man, yep.
it's just a great feeling to have. Do you notice, going into like how you're just saying you're walking through your steps, like your process, because in, you know, the learning those little things about outdoor 3D, I'm picking a spot, there's that shadow here, you know, for the uppers or lowers, those type of things. When you're confident in that, like that in your setup, that's the only thing you're focused on. Everything else just goes to, mm-hmm. in a positive way.
Right. Yeah. You never have, like, I don't have to worry about my bow. Mm-hmm. Like, I know I have my yardage set. I don't have to worry about my arrow. I have confidence in my release. I am just focused on that target. And it's just, yeah, that flow state is now what people are saying, I guess. Okay. But kind of going backtracking a little bit, like sometimes people just jive with a bow and it's like, for me, it's not necessarily something that happens like over time. Like there's been moments like my Traverse that was, you know, 6-7 years ago when the Traverse came out. I shot that bow for target, but while setting it up, I like there's moments when I know a bow is going to be good for me, mm-hmm. I'll make a shot, even if it's just 20, 30, 40 yards, but it's, you know, within the first 100 arrows is what this always happens. It's like, I make a shot and I'm like, oh man, that was a bad shot. It's probably going to be like low right, still in the middle.
Yep.
It's like, okay, if this bow, when I feel like I made a bad shot, but I still hit where I was aiming, it's like that, it's like a defining moment each time that, okay, I have a forgiving setup. You know, I have the right draw length, the right form, the right arrow spine, everything is just jiving. When I know that if I make a bad shot, it's still going to hit almost exactly where I was aiming.
Yeah.
So I don't get that with every bow. I think we can all agree to that as mm-hmm. archers. It's like every bow is not going to jive with every archer.
Yeah.
So there's ones that just, yeah, it's the one, it feels great and it shoots great. And those are the bows that you don't want to get rid of.
Yeah. that's why I was having trouble coming up with that one. Cause I was like, man, you just jive well. And you know, you're hitting all the right spots of everything I was saying. I'm like, it just brought that, it just clicked in my head. I'm like, yeah, it's just, you have that confidence in it. And like we were just saying earlier about practice. Well then how much more fun is it when you are gelling and you are confident in your setup that, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm biased, right? I just love shooting my bow. Right. I could do that all the time, but there's nothing more fun than that. Like, other than going, being with your family and doing that type of stuff. But I mean, that is just, when you have that going, man, it's just like, I don't know. Words can't explain it. And that's my joy of teaching archery to youth, because the second they just one release the arrow and they're like, oh, and they hit like the target
right
somewhere. And then they start getting, then it just starts going from that pie plate down to a little small plate, and they close that gap, and just seeing their expression. I've talked about a buddy of mine, his one son, he's younger, but man, he's just a straight up killer. Like he's a great hunter already. He's killed a beautiful 8-point. I think it scored like just under 100 this past year. But man, he's doing it from like the ground. He's doing it with his finger release. Wow. Yeah, he is phenomenal. And he has him in the backyard doing a bunch of cool stuff. So Jake's son, he's doing really, really awesome stuff, man. I'll have to send you some videos, cause it's really cool what he's got going
on. Do it. Yeah.
But, man, it's, maybe before the season really kicks off, and since this kind of leads into it, what would you tell someone before the season gets started for them to maybe stop overthinking? So we talked about like arrow setup, and that's more in that hunting world. But same could go for a little bit for target archery, but maybe for target archery before the season kicks off, what would you tell somebody to maybe stop overthinking a little bit and pay maybe attention to something else?
Sure. I mean, one thing I always tell people is like, you got to trust your pin float. I just mentioned it just a couple minutes ago, but like, nobody can ever hold their pin perfectly still. It's always going to move around a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there's, people that I think are just getting into archery, or just they're not experienced when it comes to proper shot execution. They think that professionals can just sit there with their pin perfectly still. And that's far from the truth, far from the truth. So like, it's a definite, they need to have that disconnect, just you're aiming at the target, let your pin just float around a little bit. Don't worry about it. Just do your shot process, So that's the biggest thing that I try to tell people to focus on.
Yeah. I brought this up on a couple episodes ago with Nate. And I said there was a video that Levi posted at one of the ASA events. And I think it was when was it ASA? I can't remember, because I know McCarthy and there was a bunch of other people were there. And he just gets up and he draws back and he's at anchor for a little bit and he releases the arrow and he won. He won that tournament. And it was just so funny just watching, and I'm just seeing his demeanor, right? He's focused, mm-hmm. He's laser sharp. It's unbelievable. It truly is. And after he gets done, he smiles, he gives that little fist pump, everybody comes over shaking his hand. And there was one person where he turns and he gives them like a big grin and a big smile. And he starts doing this. He's like, man, I was a little rocky. And I'm sitting there and I just start laughing. And I'm like, if you like, as an outsider, right, as someone watching this, and you're like, you would have no clue or no idea he was doing this.
Right.
I mean, it was just fascinating. And that's, man, that's something that I want to strive to get 10% at.
Right.
It's
like, there's no good way to practice pressure, like, to be honest, besides being in the situation itself.
Yeah.
Like, nothing will compare to, one arrow is going to cost you 20 grand type of thing, or 100 grand if you're at Vegas. It's like, right. You can never imitate that. So, the pros get nervous. There's no doubt about it. And I remember Vegas, I think it was like three, four years ago. I think Levi made the shoot down. It had to be like 4 years ago. Levi made the shoot down. And I think it was the first round of the shoot down. And I'm pretty sure he smashed a 9, like not even close. He was the only one to get eliminated that round. And he later talked about that. I don't know if it was at the ASA or something like that, but he's like, yeah, dude, I was just shaking so bad. Like, I just punched that trigger. like I had no chance. And then he went, because he was shooting a thumb on and off with a hinge, and now he went back to 100% shooting a hinge again. So yeah, they get nervous. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. What about your year this year? You had some really cool stories that you shared with me. Phil in the freezer got a great buck, and you were after a great buck. You know, when you look back on your year, man, how did everything play out for you? As good as you would hope for, better than you were imagining, or you're excited for next year type of stuff?
I mean, this is the fifth year. So I have a lease that's just 15 minutes down the road from here, and have it with one of my really good buddies. And yeah, this is year five, and we don't have like big tractors or anything like that, but you know, I have a four wheeler, we share that, and we've slowly built up this property, got to know it really well. And this is the fifth year, it's like there's mature bucks that have literally lived on this property the entire time that we've leased it. Mm-hmm. So we're hunting homebody deer finally, and this was the best early season that we've ever had by far. Like we had like four plus year old bucks that were daylighting. You know, we started September 13th, I think was opening day this year, but they were daylighting like most of August, most of September, and most of October. Like they were daylighting when theoretically you hear people say, oh man, October lull, it's hitting me pretty hard. You know, I'm getting little to no buck activity, and it's like our property, like we're pretty keen on where we access, when we access, how we, you know, do all that stuff. And it paid off big time. Cause yeah, the one buck that I was after, he's a 5.5 year old, lots of years of history with, we have one of his sheds from the last year. And he was the one buck that I was after in particular. And I scouted him a couple nights. I put a few good hunts after him. I saw him one time at the end of September, and just, he had that big buck sixth sense, unfortunately. I actually, it was a fun hunt. It was, I don't want to say risky, but I was standing in a cornfield. I wish I could draw it out, but it was a cornfield and then alfalfa field and then woods. And the woods, it was a point that came out. So from the tip of the corn, it was 50 yards across the alfalfa, and it was the woods. And they had been a bunch of bucks and just a bunch of deer in general were feeding in this alfalfa around this point, going to a different field. So like from the corn again to the woods was 50 yards. And I challenged myself this year to also test the theory of the red moon.
Okay.
And which I had, you know, I'd heard of, I think majority of hunters have heard of the red moon. And it's like, I didn't put much thought into it, but there's a couple of guys that I follow and I trust. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to put the theory to the test. I'll check it out. And I went hunting, I think it was like September 22nd or 23rd, but it was day one of the red moon. It was a warm day. It was not a great wind. It was an okay wind, but I was playing the thermals in particular in this spot because it was a soft wind, but it was a north or south facing slope. So thermals were pulling down this way. They were pulling past me. Everything was like a perfect setup. Day one of the red moon, hadn't had pictures of the buck that I was after for like 5-ish days, but I just knew like this alfalfa field is where he fed in along with the other mature bucks. And I think 2 hours before daylight, I had one 4-year old buck come out behind me in the corn. Then I had a bunch of does feed past me, had another mature buck out in alfalfa. I'm like, all right, tonight this could really happen. Like they're out early. This red moon, I have evidence now that this might actually be a thing. And he came out like a half hour before dark. At least it might've been 45 minutes before dark. He came out making a scrape. Like I heard branches breaking and I put my binos up and he's 15 yards in the woods, just breaking every branch that he possibly could. And he popped out. He was at like 48 yards. And I'm like, this is actually going to happen. And I hooked up and he was facing like my direction. A bunch of other deer were kind of feeding to my left and to my right, and just needed him to turn broadside because I feel confident I can shoot that far. He never did. He just like, he froze and he kind of looked at the other deer and he just kind of looked around and then he just did a 180 right back into the woods.
Unreal.
Didn't blow, didn't run. And it's all the other deer just kept feeding. It's like, I know they couldn't smell me because I instantly took some milkweed, throwing that up. And I'm like, no, everything's perfect. And I have no answer for why he busted, or I should say busted, but yeah, he just thought something was wrong. And, but then that also made me want to hunt him even harder.
Yeah.
You know, like you have that encounter, and I had one encounter with him the previous year. But he broke off his side, completely by like the first week of October. So yeah. So I didn't hunt him at all the rest of that of the previous year, but this year, he was the one that I wanted to chase.
Yeah.
And then October 13th, we had a picture of him the morning of October 13th. And I went up to a pond that was just above where we had a picture of him and didn't see a lot of deer. I saw, I think, four deer total, him being one of them. But he came in chasing a doe. This was October 13th. And he came in chasing a doe hard. And she popped out on a logging road below me at 10 yards. He stopped 15 yards into the woods. And then there's a little buck up on it at the watering hole. And he was snort wheezing at him. And yeah, so he was a super aggressive buck. Like he always wanted other deer to know that he was there, and he started making a scrape, and I did something super, super gutsy, and I snort wheezed at him while his head was behind a tree, and he got ticked off, and he made a loop, snort wheezing and making scrapes, breaking branches, made a big loop, and ended up coming right back to me at 10 yards. And I shot him right there. And yeah,
that's awesome.
I think I came back like 4 hours later just to double check. Cause I felt good about the shot, but I didn't know exactly where I hit him.
Mm-hmm.
So, waited a while, came back, and I think he still went about 150 to 200 yards, but good entry, but it actually glanced off of his rib a little bit, and it went between his rib and his hide, and then it went through and it came out right in the middle of his brisket.
Okay.
So it was interesting, like, because the next day I found my vein, this much of my arrow vein, the nock, in between his rib and his hide. And then if you looked into the chest cavity, you could see the entry hole. The entry hole in the rib cage was this far below the entry hole in the hide. You know what I mean? Wow.
Yeah.
So, and it wasn't like that crazy of a steep shot. So I just, needless to say, I won't be shooting those broadheads at a buck again, at least.
Yeah.
I'll save them for coyotes.
Yep.
Dang. But, yeah.
Details, right? It's those little details.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Dude. So, but it was, yeah, I had my best friend with me tracking the deer, and yeah, it was awesome.
So real quick, I you know, when you think back of having this property with your buddies now for 5 years, what details, and I think you alluded to them without even noticing that you did, you know, what are some of those main details that you guys have learned over the years that have been so important into the success on your property?
This property in particular, it was going to definitely be access. Mm. Like it's field bottoms that kind of spread out into like a turkey foot almost. And then there's points that come down, and, it's almost like if the foliage is off, those deer have stadium seating to you, you okay. know, they can see you come from wherever. We are fortunate enough that our farmer strip farms. So he has corn, beans, alfalfa, and sometimes oats and some other random grass and triticale in there. So like most of the time we can access through a field, like a cornfield, because he typically doesn't harvest until like mid-November.
Okay.
And that's what I ended up doing the night that I harvested my buck is I'll take my four-wheeler or my vehicle like down his field road, because he's out in his field almost every day. So we have to take that you know, take advantage of that. Like those deer are used to vehicles being driven out there. So like we will drive our vehicle, you know, pretty far out onto the property because he's doing it almost every day. But from that point on, we use fields, the cornfield in particular, to access. And that definitely was the biggest thing that we've learned over the past 5 years. And on top of that, thermals too.
Yeah.
So thermals were a new thing for me when I moved over here. But use them to your advantage once you know how they work.
Heck yeah. That's awesome. You know, one last big thing before we get into the Antler Up 5, or last couple questions. I say 5, but usually it ends up being like the Antler Up 2. But, you know, the one part other than, you know, of your another position, I guess, that you're holding at Matthews is working with doing the whole match bowstrings.
Yep.
You know, I guess, man, I feel like, one, you guys came out with those on the lift, correct?
Yep. The Title was the first bow that came out with them, okay. But only a few months prior to it because the Titles got launched in August.
Okay.
So just a few months prior to the lift. But yeah, it would have been 2024, fall of 2024 is when Match Strings came out.
Yeah. And that's been a great thing for you guys. I mean, I just think
huge.
Yeah. I mean, it's been as far as the quality is concerned. You know, I think that a lot of, you don't hear as many people saying, as soon as I buy my Matthews, I'm swapping out the bowstrings anymore. you don't, you know,
right.
So I guess talk a little bit about, yeah. You know, like your side on, you know, what you're doing with match bowstrings and maybe your goals with that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So one thing I will say, like our strings are made with the same material that every other bow manufacturer uses. It's 452X, you know, from BCY. The thing that differentiates each company is the process. One capability that we have over everybody else is we have our own custom fabricators here. Like a lot of our production equipment is made in-house. Like the team of engineers and fabricators and machinists that we have, like I'll put them up against anybody. What they can make is just unreal. And we built, I don't know how many dozens of custom machines that we have, you know, specifically for building match bowstrings. You know, we have them exceed any other string making equipment that's on the market. Our machines beat those, you know, tenfold in terms of, I'm not saying the other ones are bad quality. It's just when it comes to the capabilities, ours far outdo those ones. So it's just like that in and of itself, because we can also, like, if something does go wrong or something does need to get changed, we can do it, right. You know, like if somebody else has a manufacturing issue, you know, there's typically going to be a lot longer lead time when it comes to that. And that also applies to our bows, by the way, you know, not just strings. Having the manufacturing and the engineering team and the fabrication team, like in-house, like our turnaround time, if there is an issue or if we want to change something, literally can be done within an hour, you know, depending on what it is, and we can have a finished product.
Right.
So, same thing applies to the strings. If something needs to be changed in the process, we can, like, string department is just down the stairs from me. So I can go down there and, you know, the engineers can go down there and be like, hey, we got to do something a little bit different about this. You know, how can we change this process? Let's work on it here for the next half hour. And let's make sure that this is done correctly going forward. So, but the quality of these new strings is definitely, like, it's pretty different than trophy strings. Like, don't get me wrong, trophy strings did good for the previous models. They definitely, like, I personally never had an issue with them. I think a lot of it does have to come from the individual doing the setup.
Right.
Like, not everybody's trained on how strings actually work. Mm-hmm. You know, which might sound funny to some, but like there is a method to the madness, and you can 99% of the time you can make every string work and hold tune and have a peep sight come straight. It's just how much you want to deal with it. And, you know, lack of experience is what it kind of comes down to, because you can over twist a string, you can over twist a cable, and, you know, if you go the wrong way, blah, 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 like, yeah, we can go down a rabbit hole with that. But the match bow strings, you know, on these new bows have just been exceptionally, you know, well for us. So
it's another, yeah, just
it's been great.
Yep. I was just going to say it's another great attribute, you know, within house for you guys. And I think that's awesome. You know, to kind of, to wrap things up, Daniel, we're doing, like, I call it the antler, you know, the antler five or something along those lines, but we just kind of do a couple quick little rapid fire type questions. You know, this one's going to be, you know, reinforcing the humility and craft. You know, what's one lesson hunting has taught you that shows up in your everyday life?
Oh gosh, patience. Patience. You know, as a dad of three, and just dealing with consumers and retail shops, and it's just like, yeah, you have to have patience in a lot of aspects of life. And that's definitely number one for sure.
I like it. Besides arrows, what's one piece of gear we overthink the most?
Oh gosh.
I took the easy one out for you.
You kind of did. Cause like besides the arrow, I mean, you just have your, I mean, we could go another easy route and say your sight, because realistically you just need, your sight is only a reference, you know, it's a reference point. So like, it could be as something as silly as, you know, a stick taped to your riser if you really wanted it to be. So I think some people do overcomplicate, you know, getting their sights set up. And it's like, if you're hunting, all you need, like in the Midwest, 20 yard pin, and bows are fast enough, you know, you can probably shoot 30 yards and have only 5-inch drop, or, you know, you can still be at zero at 15 yards. So like, don't get too crazy when it comes to a sight.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that make sense?
I like that.
Does that sound appropriate?
Yep. 100%. You know, as technology continues to move faster, right. And I always say, even, you know, no matter what bow brand you're talking about, and, you know, people say, oh, it's the same thing as last year, or they just put lipstick on it or something along those lines. Regardless of that, I know there's always changes, right? Like you were just saying just earlier about the arc, you didn't think this year was going to be good, but you didn't think it was going to be what it is. And, you know, like you said, the reviews, right, and my personal opinion on it is through the roof. You know, with that being said, what part of archery or bow hunting or the bow technology do you think should never change, or should, like, we keep grounded in a sense?
Oh man. I mean, this kind of gets controversial, I guess. I'm not a huge fan of crossbows being used by everybody. I'm okay if it's like a youth that maybe can't necessarily pull back the legal draw weight, and I'm okay with disabled, and I'm okay with elderly folks using crossbows. Mm-hmm. But again, yeah, it's slightly controversial since we make crossbows. But again, I think, I'm not saying nobody can use them. I'm just saying, you know, I think it should be limited to who can use them, because I feel like there's too many able-bodied people that just take advantage of it. And then it's not just that, you know, people think of, and there's some manufacturers who are unfortunately guilty for this. They advertise a crossbow as being, you know, a gun, you know, it's going to shoot just as far, just as accurate as a gun. No, that's not true. And I don't advocate for that at all. So crossbows have limitations, and I think they should be limited to who can use them.
Yep. Last one, just so because I don't want to run you over for time. Last one, what does, and we talked about this earlier in the podcast, right off the rip, about, you know, some of the pillars of Matthews. Now, what does doing it the right way mean to you in life, or in hunting, or in archery, or at your job? What does doing it the right way mean to you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think that's the only way to do it. And it's just, you just feel confident overall. You know, if you do it the right way, this can be bad in a sense too, but like, I trust myself doing a lot of things. And if something is done wrong and I know I did it, then I will take full responsibility for it. But, doing it the right way the first time typically ensures that it's going to be, I guess, I don't know how to word that, but, yeah, I'm not too sure how to word that, I guess.
I get what you're saying though. Maybe you could look yourself in the mirror, right? Like, and you're okay with that reflection. You know, I've always been a big proponent in that. And I appreciate you even trying that answer, cause that's a tough one, man. That is. And I look at it as that, right? Like, I know what you're saying. Like, if I just know going into it, I'm going to do it the right way. You're going to, no matter win or lose or right, or if it ends up being wrong, you know, because it's not 100% or whatever it be, as long as you're doing it the right way, that it shows the character in the person. And that's why over the last couple of weeks, man, of getting a chance to get to know you, I've grown, more, I don't know what's the right word, but like, I don't want to say comfortable, right? But like, I've grown more into like, you're doing it the right way, because I could see that, from afar, and just through phone conversations, through text messages, that type of stuff, man. And that's, you know, very few people do that. So I think you're doing it the right way. And man, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for you coming on for this episode, man, doing my February, kicking off the February month of the craftsmanship episodes. You know, like I've said to you, man, you're doing a really good job, and appreciate it. And, you know, Daniel, where can, you know, I like being able to see you on certain videos aspects. You brought about the grip, you know, of the things that you guys are doing with the grips. And I know you've done the videos on that type of stuff, but where else could people maybe catch you? You said about, events and stuff like that. So if they see your name, they see you at an event, or they're listening here, cause you know, with the state of Pennsylvania and Michigan and Ohio, I got a lot of listeners and all that type of stuff. They potentially see and find you and all that type of stuff.
Yeah. We don't really have a schedule publicized on where we're going to be going, but like, feel free to reach out to me. Like I got Instagram, got Facebook, but we're going to be going to a majority of the tax shoots. I'll be at, you know, a handful of the ASA shoots, Vegas shoot as well. But like, I love chatting with people. So like, don't ever be shy, you know, come up, say hi, Bose, whatever.
I love it, man. Dude, thank you so much. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Go check Daniel out. Go check everybody else out over at Matthew's Archery. And we'll see you next week, everybody. Or actually, I keep messing that one up, Daniel. I'll see you in 2 weeks, everybody, because it's every other week. Remember that. See you next time. Antler up.
There we go.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Antler Up podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please go check us out on our Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and at antlerupoutdoors.com. If you enjoyed this episode, go leave a review and subscribe for next week's episode. Until then, Antler Up.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.